Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You know the famous story of Streetcar Named Desire. Do you know that story?
No, you got to tell me now.
Okay, so, I mean, this was a story, you know, years ago. This actor says, I just got cast in Streetcar Named Desire. And somebody says, what's it about? And the guy says, well, it's about this delivery boy, because he was playing the delivery boy. So that's all he knew. He didn't know that, like, you know, okay, that's it. All right.
Oh my gosh. Yes, absolutely.
So basically, I know all about Rosalie.
You're like, this is a musical about Rosalie.
However, I guess it's not called Rosalie, is it?
Welcome, everybody, to a musical theater podcast where we discuss the cultural and emotional impact of some of our favorite shows in musical theater history. What? I think I did that wrong. That's all good. My name is Jeffrey Scott Parsons. You can call me Jeff. Today, we are discussing the musical Carnival! Exclamation point, which was a listener request from both Roseanne and Mark. Roseanne wanted us to cover the show because, despite being oddly dark, quote, my father saw it on Broadway in the 1960s, and it's his favorite show. I grew up hearing all about it. So her dad, favorite show. Mark wrote in a funny story with his request. He said, as a kid, I was very into unicycling and juggling. Apparently, like, he competed in, like, internationally in New Zealand for unicycling and juggling. And so in my junior year of high school, I heard that the local university was looking for, quote unquote, circus performers for a show called Carnival. And at this point, he had no idea it was a musical. So he shows up to the audition, showed them his unicycling and juggling, and they asked him to sing. And he was like, oh, I don't really sing. And they said, oh, okay, well, come to the dancing call. And he was like, oh, I'm busy. And so they said, all right, and he left. And like a few minutes later, he gets basically the call asking him to be in the show because of his, you know, skills. So he goes to the first rehearsal, and it isn't until then that they give him like the score and tell him that he's going to be dancing. And he's like, wait, this is a musical? What have I gotten myself into? The biggest shock, however, was, and this is him talking again, the biggest shock was when we got into our costumes and I was given what looked like white toothpaste to cover my face and make myself a white-faced clown named Sven the Juggler. All in all, I had an amazing time and made wonderful friendships. I learned I'm not really built for the stage, but I survived and even enjoyed it. I love that so much.
Okay, well, you know what's so funny? Oh, am I allowed to say
yes, please, yet? Please, are you kidding me?
Wait, here's what's so funny is the two people, like, hello, Rose, what's her name?
Roseanne, yes.
Roseanne and Mark, and of course, it's Rosalie and Marco the Magnificent.
Oh,
so it's really...
I didn't even catch that, Debbie. That's fantastic.
Come on, fantastic. You gotta catch those things.
Oh my gosh, I love that. It's Kismet, which is another show. Anyway, here to chat about Carnival is a Tony winner in the house. She won the Tony for Best Featured Actress in Jerome Robbins Broadway. I'm wearing my friend Jerry shirt, belting and bot-mying her face off. She also starred as Rosalie in the encore staging of Carnival a while back that also starred Anne Hathaway, Oscar winner. Crazy. Anyway, we have lots to talk about. Everybody.
And Brian Stokes Mitchell.
I mean, the cast.
Hello.
Everybody, please welcome. You may know her as Debbie Shapiro or Debbie Shapiro Gravit or Debbie Gravit. It's Debbie. Yay! Thank you so much for being here, Debbie Gravit. You're amazing.
It's my honor, my pleasure. Aloha.
Aloha and mahalo. Yeah. Thank you.
And mahalo, yes.
What I love about your career is that you kind of ushered in the modern age of musical theater, if you will, by working with some of these legends that like were gone by the time many of us started performing, right? So it's like this cool bridge in our musical theater history.
I'm a bridge. That's what I am.
Not to like objectify
I am a
you.
Bridge. No, I'll be a bridge. Because you know what I was thinking? I just have to say this. Right before we started, I was thinking, at what point do you start, what happens in our lives and in our careers that you start to, people want to look back on stuff?
Mm.
It's interesting. And anyway, there's really nothing to be said about it, but okay,
no, that,
continue.
It is true. Well, I think it's when you've done something great. Because like Jesse Mueller was on the show doing Waitress, and that was just a few years ago. You know what I mean? So
Right. Yeah.
But you have done some amazing things, and I kind of want to talk about them because, like I said before we started chatting, I wear my friend Jerry shirt, ironically, because he was notoriously, what's the word? Tyrannical?
Difficult.
I don't know, difficult, right?
Exacting. He was a perfectionist.
Exacting. That's great.
Yeah.
And he is in the same, I call them, I hope you don't take offense, I call the generation of great manipulators, where like that was how you got the performance out of the actors, was you would sometimes play mind games, and Michael Bennett did it, and Jerome Robbins would do it, and Gower Champion would do it. Like everybody did it, and I'm not blaming them. It was another time. But
I don't know if it was manipulating. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked with Gower Champion, and I worked with Jerry Robbins, and I met Michael Bennett when he was really, really high. But that's another story.
Well, no, this is good. This is why I want to hear, because the internet is flooded with other types of stories, you know?
Yeah, of course, because listen, it's always, it's your point of view. It's where you were standing when you were talking or being with that person.
Sure.
I happened to love both those men, Gower and Jerry Robbins, who were very similar because they required more of you.
Mm.
Now, if you couldn't give that, I guess you were in trouble. But for the few of us, for the many of us who worked with both of them, that we could, I mean, I compare everybody to Jerry Robbins that I work with because he was brilliant and he brought out the best in you. And yeah, he could be a tyrant, but you know, so you just had to yell back. That's all. But anyway, I loved him. I did love him.
No, that's fantastic.
I'm one of like probably a basket full of people who did. But the same thing with Gower Champion. And I was in the chorus when I worked with Gower Champion.
What did
I
you did. Do it with was like, Gower?
It was my first like sort of big show. I grew up in LA. And when I was growing up, they had this thing called LA Civic Light Opera.
Yes, of course.
And they would do these incredible shows, and you'd do it in LA at the Music Center, and then you go up to San Francisco and you would do it. And, you know, it was just like a little, anyway, I got cast. Gower Champion was directing Debbie Reynolds and Harv Presnell in Annie Get Your Gun.
Oh my gosh.
And I was cast in the chorus, and it was like, oh my God, this is huge.
Gower loved me so much.
Yes. And he loved me so much that he actually wrote me a little part. I was called Ramona because he just, you know, he recognized
he wanted to give you something to do. Yeah.
A baby. And I like came out and saying, I got the sun and the morning and the moon at night. And I just came bursting out of some door. And that was me.
That's
and they came to me and they said, normally we would have you cover Debbie, but she will never miss. And you're, you know, twice as big as she is because she was wee. She was a little thing.
She's just a little tiny
little
thing.
Little.
Oh, yeah, my gosh. I'm so jealous. That's so cool.
That was pretty cool. Yeah, it was awesome.
I always heard that Gower, and we're spending time on this because Gower Champion directed the original Carnival.
oh, my God, that's right.
It was always said of him that he would wear like tennis wear, you know, like a sweater tied around his shoulders type thing. Do you remember how he would show up to rehearsal?
He was casual, but it's LA, so it was casual.
Oh,
anyway.
Sure.
But you know what's interesting, and I know we're sort of all over the place with everything. I went in anticipation of us speaking about Carnival.
Yeah.
I sort of went online to sort of remember and re-educate. And there's a thing on YouTube, and it's like, I don't know if it's the first few minutes of the encore show. It's shot horribly. You can barely see anything. But I was watching and I went, why does this look so familiar, the opening? And I realized when I did Annie Get Your Gun, he built this opening number from nothing. I remember somebody brought a, what was it called?
Like a trunk?
A trunk.
Yeah.
Like a trunk. And then the next person opened the trunk, and then he built this whole thing so that by the end of it, you had this stage life from Annie Get Your Gun.
It was like the circus. Yeah. And that's exactly the opening of Carnival.
And that's exactly. So he, you know, he copied himself. But it was so brilliant. And he did the same thing that Jerry Robbins did, which was he would clap, 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 and you had to be completely quiet because they were, you know, being geniuses.
Sure.
Anyway, so
you said like they require more of you. Is that a talent thing? Is that a discipline thing? Is that a like what is that? Is it a different gear that you shift into that you didn't know you had? Or is it all of the above?
I think it's maybe all the above because there are so many incredibly talented people.
Mm.
I mean, everybody now can sing, can dance, can act, can juggle, can, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know, Spitfire. And he didn't want you to mark ever.
Mm.
There was no marking. You didn't mark. And of course, I'm sure all your listeners know what marking is, which, you know, I'll just remind them that, you know, you just sort of like take it a little easy, sort of lay back a little bit. You're not really giving full performance. Didn't do that with Jerry Robbins.
Mm.
You did full performance or he replaced you.
Yeah.
Because he needed to see what you were going to bring. And that's a really sort of smart thing because we all do sometimes mark and then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, I didn't know they could do that.
Mm.
Because now you're seeing them not mark.
Sure.
But I feel like for me, you know what? I can only speak personally.
Absolutely.
I was always full of talent and I could sort of do everything, but I'm not one of those people who can self-direct.
Mm.
So when you say something to me that triggers something for me to enrich what you want, those are the best directors. And I just did Fiddler on the Roof for the first time in my life.
That's amazing.
Playing Golda with the Chicago Lyric Opera.
Oh, I bet you're fantastic.
And it was the most magnificent production. Stephen Sky Bell played Tevye, who had just won the Lucille Lortel Award, doing the Yiddish version. Anyway, it was like a cast of 100 people with the opera, and it was mind-blowing. And it was this director from Berlin, Barry Kosky, who does a lot of opera.
Mm.
And it was the same thing where he asked more of you. And when somebody asks more of you, you want to give more.
Mm.
I think that's life, too.
Mm.
You know, if somebody goes, oh, that's fine, that's okay. What does that mean?
Mm.
I remember, like, my first drama teacher, Don Bondi, who went on to, like, direct and choreograph stuff, a couple things on Broadway, but from my high school. And I remember once he said to me, oh, you're fine. And that meant I wasn't good. And so, even now, if somebody said, oh, it was fine, I'm like, oh, my God, I was terrible. Awful. So
it's like, that's the worst thing you could say.
That's right.
Exactly. At least tell you say I'm terrible.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. fine is.
That's so real. Well, thank you for sharing that, because I love having those pieces of information as we talk more in our lives about self-care and about healthy boundaries in the arts and in the rehearsal room, which tends to be a very sacred space. It's also very important to remember how important it is to be pushed, right? To get a little right. uncomfortable and sometimes.
Right. But of course, in the atmosphere of today, which is very different from in the way back that we're speaking about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first of all, I feel like everything is constantly this pendulum that swings back and forth. And I feel right now we're sort of at this scary part of the pendulum, because we're being so careful, it's shutting down parts of us. Because we have to be so careful at times. The other side of that is how great it is that we're honoring people's identities and making it safe for people who probably at other times would have not felt safe and ran off either to the closet or to wherever they ran off to because they didn't feel safe. I also know that, like, the Jerry Robb is the Gower champions, the Michael Bennett's, they wouldn't have been able to do what they did. Now, they would have adjusted. They would have adapted.
Sure.
I really, really
They're
have
smart.
To believe that.
Right?
Yeah, because it's just the rules of the game have changed. So you adapt. You know, you adapt or die, obviously. So I feel really good about that.
Hey, listeners, have you tried Factor yet? Remember Factor Meals? They were supposed to send me a box to try out, but they don't ship to Hawaii, so now I'm stuck with my Taco Bell. And now it's up to you. It's up to you to try it and let me know how it is, because it's May. And we can't eat like it's the holidays anymore. We're trying to get our summer bodies together. And Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great-tasting food. You can choose from 6 menu preferences to help you manage calories, maximize protein intake, avoid meat, whatever you want, it's here. Head to factormeals.com/musicaltheater50, that's musical theater with an ER, and use code musicaltheater50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code musicaltheater50 at factormeals.com/musicaltheater50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's important with context to look and see what lessons we can learn from all sorts of people in our history, especially people like Gower Champion, who honestly is somebody that I always looked up to in terms of stage pictures, because you think of like the iconic Telephone Hour in Bye Bye Birdie or Dolly walking down the staircase. I saw some stills from 42nd Street the other day and was like, ah, Gower, he just knew how to build a stage picture. But he was also a very inventive stage director, and I don't think I've given him a lot of credit for that on this podcast. And I think Carnival is a great opportunity, because here's a show coming out in like 1961, so we're still very much in the heart of traditional golden age Broadway musicals, and he's starting the show, like you said, from like a
zero.
Brechtian way, from a zero. From the audience actually watching the actors build the set and build the setting, all from this tiny little perfect tune of Love Makes the World Go Round. You know, it almost gives me chills just talking about it. That was him. That was a brand new young director who had just done Bye Bye Birdie, right? And then got hired to do this kind of bizarre little show. So really an inventive guy. Before we dive into kind of the story of Carnival, though, I think I want to spend some time talking about, and go with me on this, our literal brains, like our conscious brains and our subconscious brains. Because I think we nowadays are given a lot of time to our literal brains. What is this story saying? And how can and how do we see its literal effects in our society? If you're looking at a fairy tale through that lens, I think that all of the stories can seem very harmful. Cinderella, Little Mermaid, you know what I mean?
Creepy. Yeah, they're creepy.
They're creepy. Yeah. People seem to not quite be acting like people. A lot of the heroines are almost have like no personality whatsoever. But a lot has been done in terms of studying.
I am in the original The Little Mermaid, by the way, just so you know. Debbie, I am one of the voices.
You're
I'm
one of
the
voices.
Yes, I am. So,
Which one? Do you remember which one you sang?
No, I didn't sing. I was one of the speaking sisters. For some reason, they didn't need me to sing. They wanted me to speak.
So, okay.
Well, I said, she's got it bad. Thank you. Thank you. I'll take
you're the
I'll take
she's
my check
got
now.
It bad.
She's got it bad. Yes. And then I'm also the scrub woman when Sebastian the crab, there's like an old lady and she's like, well, if you ask me, and I do a whole little speech while he's being, he's being scrubbed.
Yes, on the little board. Oh my gosh, I didn't know this. And I'm kind of speechless.
Okay. I'll talk over you.
No, I'm
but,
so great.
But
does
it's
that
so
mean like? Did you know Howard? Did you ever work with
Howard? But I know Alan really well. Actually a neighbor. I do. He's
oh my gosh! Well, you're amazing. By the way, everybody, Debbie came out with an amazing record of all Alan Menken songs. Mm. So, like, if you want to actually hear what We'll Have Tomorrow or Daughter of God or Take Care of Your Heart sound like.
Oh my God, you're so good.
Oh my gosh, I love that album. Anyway, sorry, what were we talking about?
So we're talking about, so fairy tales. No,
yeah.
I get it. And it's been fascinating. I haven't seen the new version of The Little Mermaid.
I don't know that I want to. Sure. It's great. But this isn't just like to hate on The Little Mermaid, but a lot of like the live action Disney remakes have been about, okay, how do we take this literal minded approach to these fairy tales that when you look back at them, were constructed to almost access the subconscious mind to help us deal with anxieties and stresses of life more so than teaching little girls to give up their voice in order to, you know, go be with their crush.
Man.
Yeah. And I think that Carnival is a fairy tale that's not a Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale. When you look at these characters that from, once again, using that literal brain, you're like, I don't think people really behave like this. And there's a case to be made for that. If you can set that to the side, if we can just put that over here, and it's great and it's fine and it's absolutely a valid viewpoint, but let's just set it over here for this episode and kind of look at this show and let it kind of wash over us and see what maybe is underneath, because I think it's pretty profound. Now, the one literal thing that I do want to look at with this show is the power of puppets. How on earth have we as humans decided that, like, you get next to Kermit the Frog and that thing that's made of felt and like styrofoam, it has life? We all just forget that these puppets are being handled by somebody else because they are so iconic and really access, I think, dreams, wishes. I don't know. It's a really beautiful thing.
It is beautiful. And I think that the idea in Carnival is that this man is incapable of vocalizing his love for this person. Now, she's way too young for him and he's too old for her, and that's like a little creep thing. But
that's, once again,
put that on the side. A la carte menu, please. But this is what fairy tales and stories speak to us about, which is we all don't have the gift of verbalizing all our feelings all the time. And
so much gets in the way.
Especially to people. That's right. And I mean, how many times, I don't know about you, but I watch movies and I'm always going, just tell him, tell him, just talk to each other. You know, you're like, why aren't you just saying what you feel?
Absolutely.
You know, now if you're British, okay, I get it. You're not supposed to do that. But it makes me crazy.
The thing that popped into my head was last year when Everything Everywhere All at Once came out, which I just loved. And Michelle Yeoh is fighting with her daughter, and she like goes up to her, and you think that she's going to say something beautiful, and then she just says, "You're getting fat, you need to watch what you're eating." And you're just like, "No! Just say I love you." Right? But like that's her puppet. Like that's the only way that she can say it.
Right. Right.
Oh my
So I think obviously circling back to Carnival, it's a fascinating take. And then you have little Anne Hathaway, you know, who then responds to those puppets. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting thing. I mean, every kid has their stuffed animal that they're talking to or cuddling or making out with, or, you know, not that I ever did that.
I have no idea what that means. But I think that these puppets are something that everybody can agree on. Because we all grew up with Sesame Street. We all know, like, the Muppets are one of the most iconic intellectual properties out there. And even Jim Henson, I think, when he was inducted into a Hall of Fame, you know, he said, we owe all of this to the old TV shows that first introduced people talking to puppets. And I think the first one was called Something Fran and Ollie.
Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
Kukla, thank you. See?
Kukla,
nice
Fran,
job.
And Ollie.
That's why I need both of us. And that was such a hit because it was a children's show that also accessed adults. Like, everybody loved watching that because there was this woman, Fran, and she was talking back and forth with the puppets, and it was fun and you know, smart and clever. And then based on that, there was this short story called The Seven Souls of Clement O'Reilly by this guy named Paul Gallico. And he wrote kind of what you were just talking about, which is this man who can't really access parts of his heart. And so he uses the puppets that he performs with to express that. And that then became a movie called Lily in 1953 that starred the amazing
Leslie Caron.
Amazing Leslie. I mean, I rewatched that movie in preparation to chatting with you, and she's just so lovely and such a unique talent on screen, and so unique that
Gigi is one of my favorite movies ever.
Oh, really?
And that's really wrong, too, but I just love it so much. And I met her, and I just sat at her feet and worshipped her, and we did something together, and she was as wonderful as you wanted her to be.
Oh, that's so great to hear.
Another shorty. They're all short.
They're all short.
Everybody in the movies is short, everybody. Everybody in the movies, short.
But she was so lucky that this story was written because she has such a unique presence and a unique set of skills that post-American in Paris, which like turned her into a star, the studio were having a hard time finding pictures for her to star in. And then here comes Lily, which is just kind of built for her. So after Lily's a big old hit, which also had a big old hit of a song, A Song of Love is a Sad Song. Hi, Lily. Hello.
Okay.
That was from that movie. And I'm always really fascinated by movies that become musicals but are famous for different types of songs. Anyway, once that was a huge hit, then
yeah,
Carnival,
like an inverted version of that song.
You're right. It does sound like that.
Yeah. Well.
But David Merrick, the Abominable Showman, gets pitched this idea to turn Lily into a stage musical. Long story short, the great Bob Merrill, who's someone we haven't talked about on the podcast yet, wrote the score. Now, Bob Merrill is probably most famous for writing the lyrics to Funny Girl. That was his biggest hit, but he also was a composer in his own right. This is probably his most well-known score. Am I right in that? What do you think?
That I know. Because
he wrote a lot of musicals, and pretty much all of them flopped. Really too bad. Some great work, of course, in all of them, but he had some notorious flops like Breakfast at Tiffany's with Mary Tyler Moore. That was his. Pretty Belle with Angela Lansbury. They just didn't take, but Carnival did. In addition to Bob Merrill, Michael Stewart comes on to write the book, who would later go on to do Hello, Dolly. Gower Champion comes on, who would later go on to do Hello, Dolly. So
And Mac and Mabel.
So David Merrick is kind of creating his little team that would repeat several times thereafter. Did you ever do Mac and Mabel?
I did a big, giant concert version with Jerry in London.
In London? Were you a part? And like multiple Mabels? Was that that one?
Correct. Yes. It was Georgia Brown, mm-hmm. Debbie Gravitt, Tommy Toon, Paige O'Hara,
who had
just come off of doing Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast, right.
Oh my God. There are other people too, and I can't remember who they are.
Frances Ruffell, wasn't she on there?
Oh, yes, she was.
Yeah. Anyway, Ruffell, is that
who you say? She was pregnant.
Oh, how cute. You're going to have to help me with some of these French pronunciations in the show because I am the worst, literally the worst. So, great team, small little odd show opening in a season that honestly, and I've said this on the Milk and Honey episode we did last year, this Broadway season is one of my favorites because it is so diverse. It has so many weird, interesting shows. 61 or 62. Okay. I forget what the Tony Awards, how they spaced out. But you had like How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, Carnival, Milk and Honey, Kwamina.
I've heard of that one.
It's a Richard Adler, like Damn Yankees Pajama Game fame. No Strings, Richard Rodgers and Diane Carroll winning, you know, being the first Black woman to win the Tony Award for Best Leading Actress. So, like, it's such an interesting season. And a lot of the shows don't get done anymore, but I think it's filled with all of these really cool nuggets. And Carnival is one of them. It ends up being nominated for Best Musical. It doesn't get nominated for Best Score, which is kind of crazy. But the competition was really stiff because there were just so many musicals. And it wins for Best Leading Actress for Miss Anna Maria
Arrighetti.
Yeah. Now, if anybody doesn't appreciate the soprano voice, go listen to this Carnival cast album. I mean, my gosh, she sounds just
I was really
spectacular.
Sad that we didn't record our version.
Me too. It was recorded for like the New York Public Library, right? That's what I read.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But you guys would have sounded incredible. So now let's go to Encores because the show gets done in community theaters, but in terms of having a major revival, not so much.
Right.
But you guys had an incredible cast when Encores decided to stage it in the early 2000s?
Yeah, I think it was 2007.
Okay.
2007? I don't know.
we're gonna give ourselves a little window
we'll
there. In the role of Lily was Anne Hathaway. Mm-hmm. You had Brian Stokes Mitchell playing the guy with the puppets. You were playing the incomparable Rosalie. And who was your magician? Douglas Sills. Oh my gosh. Come on.
Yeah.
You ate up that
stage. It was pretty fabulous. This is like the end of the story, but they did want to move the show to Broadway because people did love it. But this is a quote. Anne Hathaway wanted to be a movie star.
Oh.
And she was right on the precipice. She had done, I guess, Princess Diaries.
Yeah.
The first one. And, you know, her management just went, no, you don't want to get stuck doing a Broadway show. And
yeah,
I mean, she was really young.
Wow.
You know, her parents would pick her up, I think, from rehearsals. And,
oh, my gosh.
I mean, it was crazy. It was crazy. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and I guess she was
and
right.
I was mad about that because I went, oh, this would be really fun to do on the Broadway.
Yeah.
But didn't happen.
That's too bad. Now I need to go to the New York Public Library to see if that is actually true.
Well, I'll go with you. I want to see it.
Okay, let's talk through the show a little bit. We'd already discussed this opening. that begins with Love Makes the World Go Round, probably the most famous song from the show. Yeah. It reminds me of like Try to Remember, like those beautiful, beautiful songs from this time period. I mean, I think I can guess the answer, but why do you think the show starts out with this song?
Well, I don't remember it starting out with that, but I don't know if that our version did.
Oh, sure.
Maybe the tune of Love
Makes
the World
Go Round. It's just the tune, yeah.
It's just the tune, and then it morphs into this other moment where he presents the cast.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, you know, smart people go with their hit.
Why not
do the, you know, the most tuneful thing? I mean, I think they knew right away. That's a smart thing that good writers do. They tease. I happen to love White Christmas and actually tried to get it produced many years before it actually did, when it was still like on a DVD. And I was like, this would be the greatest Broadway musical. Anyway, if you listen to that, throughout the movie, all the background music that's being played while, you know, everybody's talking is blue skies, blue skies, blue skies. You're hearing blue skies 50,000 times. Every tune just keep getting repeated, repeated, repeated. So it's an earworm. And then when you hear the song in the show, you're like, oh, that's so beautiful. Like, why does it sound so familiar to me?
I know this
so,
one.
That's right. So these are smart people who do that. So that's my guess with that.
And I think that emotionally it connects as well, right? You're planting the seed so that when people actually do listen to the lyric and the full song, it lands, you know, it has some weight. This beautiful, simple little tune is the basis of this whole fairy tale.
John Tartaglia. He was one of the puppets.
Oh, he was in your, he was like the assistant, the puppeteer assistant guy?
Because he worked on Sesame Street.
Oh,
so they got he and Steph, I can't remember her last name.
From D'Ambrosio? D'Ambrosio?
Yes.
From Avenue Q maybe. World?
Yes.
That's cool.
Anyway, awesome. So they went on to do, obviously, Avenue Q. I think they were going to do that right after that. Does that make sense?
Oh my gosh, go figure.
Yeah, so anyway, sorry, it was very star-studded, and there were a lot more people in it than that, even, so.
So the simple tune bleeds into Direct from Vienna, which is the, you know, welcome to the show, welcome to the carnival. And in the carnival, we have the great magician. How would you describe Mr. Marcus? He's
Marco the Magnificent. Marco,
excuse me.
He's a complete and total narcissist, and, you know... Or maybe that was Doug Sills at the time. No, I love him. I love him. No, he was fantastic.
I bet.
He's got the thing.
And you know, Marco has his incomparable assistant, Rosalie, originally played by the amazing Kay Ballard.
Oh, my God.
Right?
What a talent she was. Incredible.
For those who may not remember, one of the ugly stepsisters from like the Julie Andrews Cinderella, right? So much incredible, great comedic musical theater that she gave us, playing Rosalie. So can you talk a little bit about the dynamic between Marco and Rosalie?
Well, I mean, I think he just sort of tortures her. And she, of course, loves him. And, you know, it's all a little bit unrequited, and yet it's not. I think they sort of give each other what they both need, maybe not what they want, but what they need.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a really fascinating relationship, which I don't know that you would portray, you know, again these days.
Mm.
A fraught, you know, hetero relationship.
It's like, who cares?
Yeah, really. Screw them. I remember just having such a great time with it. And of course,
absolutely.
You know, of course I had a crush on him. And of course it was, you know, completely ridiculous. But, you know, that's just like what we do in the theater. We crush on the person that we're playing opposite of. And
absolutely.
I think it helps.
Especially
really
when they're that talented.
Yeah.
No, and it is this really fun dynamic where Marco is such a ladies' man and is always trying to get with everybody, and honestly probably does get with everybody. And Rosalie knows it and knows way more than he even knows she knows, you know, like that sort of thing.
Right.
And it gives her a lot of fire to work from.
Right. And I think that she, at one point, and you probably know this more than I do, at one point she sort of like says to little Anna
Lily.
Marie Abigetti, mm-hmm. Lily, careful.
Yeah.
Careful.
Yeah, I can handle this dude. You can't handle this dude.
Yeah. And she, of course, she's right. Yeah.
That's so true. Also in the carnival is Paul. Paul has a puppet show, which is, I mean, unfortunately failing miserably. Paul is a veteran from the war. He was originally a dancer and then has sustained a war injury on top of, I'm sure, all of the other trauma that comes from serving in a war. And has really withdrawn himself into this kind of world of puppets. The guy who owns the whole thing is like threatening to shut down the puppets because it's just not popular, especially in comparison to Marco and Rosalie. And right at that point is when Lily enters the world. Lily is an orphan. Her parents have died. Fairy tale, anybody? And she comes into this kind of magical world of the carnival looking for the souvenir man who her father told her to seek out because he might be able to get her a job. So here comes this young, very innocent girl, orphaned, looking for the guy. He's no longer around. I believe he's passed away as well. And within like the first 10 minutes of her being in this world, she's basically assaulted. Marco happens to run into the whole situation and saves her. And that kind of gives birth to her infatuation with him. She's now in love with Marco because he saved her. Let's see. I might need to check my notes. But does she then get hired to be another assistant?
Oh, yes. Then she does get. Yeah. She becomes part of the show, which is when she. Yeah.
Yes. Lily gets offered a job in the magic show, and Lily is so excited to take it. She sings this beautiful song called Yes, My Heart, which is, if you're looking for a soprano audition song, ladies, gobble that one up. It's fantastic. Unfortunately, at the magic show, Lily's so excited that she ruins one of the magic tricks, and she's humiliated. And now this leads to poor Lily, like, trying to commit suicide. Like, this is
this was a dark show.
Yeah, like this is where I'm like, it feels like a fairy tale because it's fanciful and there's puppets and there's wonder and imagination. And also in the first act, there's sexual assault. There is a suicide attempt and like a protagonist, a male protagonist who is hated by every other character in the show. Like it's strangely kind of dark.
What a fun show.
Right? Yes. I think it's fascinating. She decides, it's a really interesting way to kill herself. She decides to try to climb up like where the acrobats, like the tightrope.
The trapeze.
Yeah, right. The trapeze, thank you. To jump off, right? And end things. And as she's about to do it, a puppet pops up. The puppet, of course, being one of Paul's puppets. But Paul, because he can't talk and express his emotions in this way, he uses the puppet named Carrot Top, because he's like a little ginger, to talk Lily down from the cliff, literally. And it works, and she connects to the puppet. Now, never once does Lily like peer behind the curtain at this beginning and be like, who's talking there? She fully accepts that this puppet is saving her life and connects to it. Carrot Top isn't the only one, though. There are several other puppets, all of which embody a different personality of Paul's. Because we are complex people with lots of different parts of ourselves. And so any time that someone's a little egotistical, another different puppet comes out and talks. But Carrot Top is really the one who cares most about Lily and wants her to be happy and wants to take care of her. And this friendship, this really beautiful relationship begins to grow between Lily and the puppets, so much that it gives birth to now the most popular thing at the carnival. It's a puppet show where Lily talks to the puppets and they sing. And there are several really sweet songs, no pun intended, because one of them is called Beautiful Candy, that really get to delve into the fun dynamic of the jokes and the heart. And they're just really charming. The first act ends with Love Makes the World Go Round, which is what Lily sings. Once again, everybody, go listen to this cast recording. It's so beautiful. Paul is in love with Lily. He can't talk to her about it. And, like, what's going to happen, right? That's kind of the big cliffhanger. One thing before we go to the second act that I got to talk to you about, though, is the song Humming, which is Rosalie's big song. And I did not know this song very well at all. And I've listened to it at least four times because I think it's so funny and so clever. It basically is about how Rosalie knows that Marco has cheated on her because he'll always hum. So every time he's like walking around humming in a good mood, she's like, that son of a bitch. Right. It's pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
That had to be fun to sing.
I wish I was able to sing. Oh my God, it was incredibly fun to sing. I mean, listen, you have to know, and for those of you who don't know, you know, when you do an Encores production, you have a small rehearsal window and unfortunately a small performance window. Mm. And the whole thing about when you're doing a show, no matter what show you're doing, the more you do it, the better you are and the more comfortable you are. So you sort of have to go into instant performance mode. Mm. So I guess I could take the song out right now and like look at it again. I probably should, because I'd probably be so much better now because I would remember it and everything.
Are you guys memorized in Encores? I forget. Or do you have scripts in hand?
Well, you know what's interesting about that? Donna Murphy called me one day. She was about to do Wonderful Town for Encores.
And she said,
okay, tell me what really happens. And I said, Donna, you should be completely memorized. They say, oh no, technically you're supposed to have your book in hand.
Like Equity Rules,
technically,
right?
Technically, yeah. Nobody uses their book and everybody's memorized. So that if you're the asshole who didn't memorize your stuff, you're going to look like, wow, well, she's not very good. So anyway,
I helped
Donna Murphy earn her other Tony Award.
Well, and Wonderful Town got to go to Broadway.
To the Broadway. Yeah.
Because Anne Hathaway didn't need to become a movie star in that
That's
one.
That's right. Anyway, so you do, but again, it's fast. So, you know, the next time I do an encore show, I will be well armed and prepared if I ever do one again.
You've done, was that the last one you did?
I did Voice from Syracuse, Carnival. Oh, maybe Carnival was the last one I did.
Yeah. What was the other Bach and
Tenderloin.
Tenderloin, of course. You guys did record that one, and your Little Old New York is fantastic.
And My Gentle Young Johnny. I think that's such a beautiful song. And then, of course, and we did record Boys from Syracuse as well. Mm. So I just assumed we were going to record our Carnival, but that didn't happen.
Instead, you get this podcast episode, everybody.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, listeners, have you tried Factor yet? Remember Factor Meals? They were supposed to send me a box to try out, but they don't ship to Hawaii, so now I'm stuck with my Taco Bell. And now it's up to you. It's up to you to try it and let me know how it is, because it's May and we can't eat like it's the holidays anymore. We're trying to get our summer bodies together, and Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting food. You can choose from 6 menu preferences to help you manage calories, maximize protein intake, avoid meat, whatever you want, it's here. Head to factormeals.com/musicaltheater50, that's musical theater with an ER, and use code musicaltheater50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code musicaltheater50 at factormeals.com/musicaltheater50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. All right, so in Act Two, like we said, the puppet act has become a hit, and then things get a little dark again. Paul gets really jealous because Lily is still infatuated with Marco the Magnificent. And so he kind of goes all director tyrant, speaking of some of our faves. Mm-hmm. He starts like controlling every little thing that she does during the show and picking everything that she does apart, to the point where Paul and Lily get in this huge argument. And then at the apex, at the worst possible moment of that fight, he says, "I love you," and like kisses her. And she's like, "Are you kidding me? This is the most confusing, aggravating human I've ever met in my entire life." And she sings this song called "I Hate Him," while he sings in counterpoint this song about her face, because she's got a great face. Anyway, this is kind of the crux of the second act, is that he's like slowly letting things out, but like at terrible times, and it's just confusing poor Lily to death. Yeah. Rosalie and Marco the Magnificent have a kind of happy ending, though, right? You guys have this as dysfunctional as it seems, you had this song called Always. You just say always, always, always over and over again. What's it called? Always, Always You is the song. And is that kind of where we leave those two? Is that, oh, no. Wait, because I totally forgot about this. So Rosalie is always kind of dangling this guy named Dr. Glass over Marco's head, saying like, "I'm going to run away with this guy and you'll never see me again." And so like that's kind of her ammo that she's always using to make Marco be in line. Anyway, Dr. Glass proposes to Rosalie and she turns him down, but takes instead a contract to allow their magic show to tour all of these super fancy hotels that he happens to own in Europe. So like Rosalie, as the true businesswoman, just like solidified their itinerary for the next couple of years. And so they're a happy campers.
Wow, Rosalie. She had her shit together.
So then that leaves us with what on earth is going to happen with Paul and Lily.
Lily, so excited to hear
what on earth is going to happen. Paul has fully realized that he is in love with her, and she has kind of unlocked this part of him that he thought didn't exist anymore. But unfortunately, she has become so fed up with his back and forth and all the drama that she's leaving the carnival. She says goodbye to Marco, and it's interesting because Marco has this one last attempt to like get with Lily, and Lily at that point stands up to him and he's like, "Oh shoot, you've grown up, little girl. Good for you." And in a weird way, by her rejecting this infatuation that she had with Marco, is kind of the sign that she has grown up here at the carnival. Then the puppets appear to Lily and they ask her to take them with her.
Right. Oh, I remember that now.
It's so sweet. And they're like shaking and trembling. And that's the moment when she grabs the puppets and takes them off of Paul's hand. Now, do you remember, and if you don't, that's totally okay, did you play it in this Encores version as though that's the first time that Lily realizes that Paul's been behind the puppets?
I don't. You know what? I don't remember. I don't. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
I'm sorry.
But once again, that's kind of like the literal part of the brain that you just kind of have to set over here. Because right. originally it was written that, like, this is the moment when she shows that she has matured. That is also the moment that she's willing to finally recognize that these puppets are being puppeteered by someone else. And Paul reveals himself as kind of like the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain, and that it's been him all along. She puts it all together that all of these different puppets, all of these different personalities are what make up this one human being, and she's able to see him for who he truly is. And they continue on with the carnival together because kind of that is the setting, that's the far, far away that allowed them to get to know each other in the truest sense. So just problems and black ketchup abound. Here's what I have to say about this and what makes this show kind of seep into my cellular DNA. We are all whole people and we are all terrible at showing the people we love the most that fact. And I'm speaking this as my own personal self. I know that I am a control freak. I know that I am kind. I know that I am selfless. And I know that, like, the person who loves me has to deal with all of those parts of my personality coming out at times that aren't always awesome. And that's what being in a relationship is. And what I think soothes all that anxiety for me about this show is that the people who love you will see that puppet and recognize that it's part of you. Does that make any sense to you? Does that, like, connect in any way?
I'm really trying to work that out in my brain. The only thing I can say is that what you just basically did say is that we are all made of many, many parts.
Mm-hmm.
And what's so interesting in relationships is what attracts us to different people and mutual attraction. I mean, it's not always easy. I mean, that's why people are like, you don't know what goes on in the bedroom with people, mm-hmm. you know, that you don't know what goes on behind closed doors with people. Cause you're like, why are they together? Why are those two people together? But we're attracted to these weird things that we can't summarize in a neat little, tight little two line story.
That's it.
And so, you know, for this guy, I mean, it's sad that true. It gets back to what we started talking about, which is like, be honest, tell, you know, give people your truth about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I have three children and I hopefully, if there's one thing I've taught them is, you know, be honest, be truthful to people because life is short. Tell people how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
Don't waste any of that.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, you're seeing this show and you're like, just tell her you love her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just want to, like, you know, rip off the puppets from this guy.
Yeah.
And I think that we all have a little bit of that with us in ourselves.
Yeah.
You know,
I think we all have our puppets.
Yes, we all have our puppets.
I think that's what I'm trying to say is that there we have parts of ourselves and sometimes we don't even know they exist.
And we don't always want to reveal.
And we don't always want to reveal. But when you meet somebody you love, they come out. They come out because of love. And, like, that's kind of magical.
Cue the music. Here we go. And go. Makes the world go round. Love makes the world go. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being with us. Okay,
yes,
sorry.
But seriously, like, now the song hits, right?
Right.
We heard
right.
the little concertina at the beginning to kind of introduce this tune. But now it's like, all right. Now we get it. It's a weird show. It's a weird,
it's a
interesting
weird
show. But yeah. The more I think, the more I just kind of let it wash over me, the more I'm like, there is something really sad and beautiful and real about this show that in many ways makes no sense. And isn't that art?
That's art.
Yeah. Debbie Gravitt, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
It's so great.
When you look back on this show, What are we walking away with? What do we keep? What do we dump? Like, should it be done? What do you think?
I think in the context of the time that it came out of, which is post-war, when there were many walking damaged people.
Amen to that.
Which is probably, you know, we're sort of living that right now. We're all sort of walking around.
Little zombie.
Somewhat a little zombie apocalypse damaged humans. I don't know. I don't know that this isn't one of those, like, you'd have to do it as like a historical moment in time. I don't know. It would take somebody very, you know, again, if you take away a lot of the darkness, you know, you need darkness to let in the light. So I don't know if somebody could take this piece and retool it. And then it would be like, what?
It'd be something might be even more confusing.
It would be more confusing. So maybe
I sometimes use on the podcast this metaphor of black ketchup, because my great grandma was from this time period, from like post-war. And so she didn't throw a lot of things away. And in her basement, she had all of these like containers of ketchup, like these bottles of ketchup that had turned black. Like they were no longer red, they were black. And it was like, hey, grandma, maybe we should throw these away. She's like, oh, it's fine. You know what I mean? Like, and I wonder sometimes, metaphor, if we have musicals like that in our theater history, where they've sat on the shelf way too long and they've turned a little black, and it's like, all right, well, maybe do we just throw them away and are grateful that they were there?
Yeah.
Or do we dump,
I would hate
or,
to see that.
Or do we dump out the black ketchup and put in some new stuff there? There are many ways to kind of approach it, but I don't want to forget this because it's a good exercise for us in 2023.
Yes, I completely and totally agree. I know how you could fix the show. I know how you could make it more palatable. If you shorten the age difference between the two, that's one thing right there. And if you gave it the context of, you know, not like you can, you know, have shots from World War II or World War I. In fact, did this come out of World War I or World War II?
It was two.
I think it came out of World War
II. Oh, do you think so? Oh, well, because maybe the carnival, the whole idea of the carnival was probably more popular post-World War I, right?
Yeah, it might have been, yes, World War I. Anyway.
Wow.
But that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think there's so much good to it that it should be
remembered
for in some way.
Yeah, agreed. I feel the exact same way about all of the amazing shows that you have done over the years, and I can't wait to see what you do next, because you have like this amazing family and you've really dedicated time to cultivating that and also doing amazing, you know, concert tours and things like that. But I'm not gonna lie, I'd love to see you on stage sometime soon.
Me too. I'm ready.
As always, if you have recommendations for shows you'd like us to cover on A Musical Theater Podcast, you can always email me at amusicalpodcast@gmail.com, just like our friends Roseanne and Mark. Be sure to follow us on social media. We always got great content there, as well as on Patreon ! Where for only $1 a month, you get bonus episodes. And you know what? The best way to support the show is, of course, to give us a nice review and rating wherever you might be listening. Don't forget, check out our Tee Public store, where you can get your very own My Friend Jerry t-shirt. And the profits we receive from that will go to Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. More than anything, I'm grateful for you, and I'm grateful for these conversations that we have, and for the opportunity to talk with amazing people like Miss Debbie Gravitt. Debbie, do you have a website that people can go to learn more about you?
I do. It's sort of being reconstructed, but yes. It's debbiegravitt.com. Very
amazing.
Difficult to remember.
And
yeah. And of course you can find me, you know, on Spotify and, you know, on everything, all the music things.
The Jerome Robbins Broadway cast recording, Tenderloin, all of the encore stuff, the Alan Menken album. I'm telling you guys, Debbie's a treasure.
That's me.
Thank you again for chatting with me. And everybody out there, take off your puppets.
Wow. Yes. Take off those puppets.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.